Okay, this is Friday morning, January 12th, 2024, AD or CE, whatever you prefer. And I was out sick yesterday. I ate something that my GI tract did not agree with. It was very, very uncomfortable for a long time until it worked its way out of my system, which it seems to have done for the most part. Okay. Now, I sent myself a reminder, the idea of what I wanted to talk about this morning, although another possible subject reared its head in the middle, so I may digress on that, or I may just do a separate thing on that. The subject I came up with was related to a video I had watched while lying around and not feeling very well about Morgoth's Ring. Now, for those of you who don't know, Morgoth is the big bad in Tolkien's Middle-earth. That's the later name given to Melkor, who is basically the Lucifer/Satan character in Tolkien's universe. So this may require some inside knowledge to get full benefit from. But the point was, the idea of Morgoth's Ring is that, and this is something Tolkien himself expressed, that while Sauron had the one ring into which he poured his malice, his cruelty, and his will to dominate all life, to quote the movie, Morgoth's Ring is actually all of the substance of Arda, Arda being the world, the Middle-earth, and the other parts of that world. And the idea is that Melkor had poured his being, his malice, his cruelty into the whole world, and so all of it is marred by his efforts, not just his physical efforts that he did during the stories, which caused lots of trouble, but by the very will and effort of putting his being, his spirit, into the essence of Arda, which he had wanted to claim for himself. Since from the beginning he had wanted to create things and beings of his own, other than himself, but wasn't able to. The idea behind it is that no matter what is done, this is the conclusion of the speaker in Deep Geek, which is a YouTube channel. I'll try to remember to put the link on this. It's a good channel. So I'm happy to encourage people to go watch some of his stuff and learn a bit more about Middle-earth than you might have known otherwise. The idea that he came about was that basically, look, there's never going to be a way to eliminate Morgoth's effects on the world. You could destroy the ring and wipe out Sauron, but Sauron is tiny compared to Melkor Morgoth in a in almost no comparison way, even though the direct effects of his efforts were more noticeable and more down to earth once Melkor was gone anyway, that the only way to sort of redeem everything would be, in the end, to destroy and remake Arda in accordance with Iluvatar's original plan. And this goes very much along with the whole Christian story of the, you know, Revelation, the end of the world, the recreation of heaven and earth, and all of that stuff. It's not original to Christianity, and it's not isolated to Christianity, but probably more people in the world are aware of and familiar with it. I may be wrong about that. But the idea is that Morgoth, his influence on the world could only be changed by destroying and recreating the world free of that influence. And then everything would be redeemed and everyone would be able to have a joyful life and the way that things were supposed to be without the tendency towards evil and all that other stuff. And it occurred to me that that's all well and good. Obviously, it's very nice to have a new world where things are better. But what about Morgoth and Sauron and the Balrogs and all of them if the new world is not remade for them as well, if they are not redeemed and recreated and re-educated, you know, shown literally the error of their ways, then there really is no ultimate justice. Because while it is true that Melkor, Morgoth, in the stories, caused a great deal of suffering for many others, it's also clearly true that Melkor suffered. And if you, again, going inside the story, at the end of the Silmarillion, he was beaten, had his feet cut off, his head chained between his knees and thrust out into the void to stay there forever, or at least until the world is remade, but maybe forever, who knows? The void being the place outside of creation, and presumably outside of Iluvatar's realm as well. Analogous in many ways to the modern Catholic notion of hell, which is not so much fire and brimstone as just absence from creation, you know, being outside the source of life and light and everything else. But, you know, Melkor was also a created being in these stories. Melkor clearly from the start had some kind of flaw. He was made imperfectly. That is not exactly the same thing as saying he was made imperfect. He was made imperfect, as, of course, one would assume all beings are. But he was badly built by Iluvatar in the sense that he was missing something. There was some neurodevelopmental disability, if you will, in his being that led him to not see things the same way as all of his fellow Ainur, the other Valar, whatever you want to call them, and to feel something missing from the start. I mean, think about it. He's there in the beginning with all the other Valar, and he's missing something. There's some drive or urge that he feels that is unfulfilled. Imagine being a human that has desires or urges or sensory needs or whatever that are different from the average human, or maybe from every other human in a fairly profound way. This is very unpleasant right from the start, and not through any fault of his own. How could it be a fault of your own when you were the one created? The notion of free will being an out that absolves the creator of responsibility is nonsense. Free will with incomplete information is always going to be flawed, even if it could exist, which philosophically there are some very real questions about whether any kind of contra-causal free will could even be coherent. The being Melkor was created by supposedly an omnipotent and omniscient being, Iluvatar. He claims to be that way anyway. And he was created in a certain way. And his flaws and his actions and his errors and his mistakes and his destructive acts and the evil that he did is born ultimately from the nature of what he was and the universe in which he was created. He couldn't by will choose to be fundamentally different than he was, any more than you can. You can't decide that you are going to have the biochemistry and neurochemistry of a tsetse fly because you don't like the way you are now. You can't just choose to have the drive to exercise if you don't have that drive. You can't just choose to not like to eat foods that are unhealthy for you. If you like to eat those foods, you can choose to avoid them, but that involves a cost. And it's not necessarily even true that you can choose at all times, because even willpower requires energy and can become fatigue. I'm overshooting my 10-minute mark here. I'm going to try not to go too much further. But unless Iluvatar can remake the world at the end after it's been destroyed, and kind of also remake or at least re-educate. Again, presumably everyone will be reborn in a sense, but will also have a continuous, will have a continuity with their previous existence. Otherwise, they're just new beings and nothing has been gained and nothing has been learned. And you can't honestly say that they are benefiting from being in this new world. It's just new people. Now, that's fine for the new people, but it certainly doesn't do anything to help the people who have suffered and been alone and died and lost and all that other stuff. So unless there's a continuity of experience, there's no relief. There's no gain. There's just, again, a restart. The idea is that Ilúvatar should have the capacity to fix even Melkor. And not just necessarily fix him by going in and tinkering with his brain, though maybe that's doable. Maybe he could do that and maintain the continuity and show Melkor the error of his ways directly just by changing his fundamental programming. His primary or terminal goal in the language of artificial intelligence and decision theory and so forth. But most of us cannot wish to change our terminal goals. So something else has to be done about it. I've heard I think it was Robert Miles who talked about how if you could take a pill that would make it so that you wouldn't care whether your children suffered or died or whatever happened to them, it wouldn't bother you. Would you take that pill? No. Because right now, that is extremely important to you. This is assuming you have children. If you don't, it's hard to think of anything that's quite as powerful for someone who doesn't have children or similar. Personal survival is close, but not as strong. As anyone who's been suicidally depressed can tell you, there are times when self-preservation and self-affirmation is not as strong a drive, and you frankly would be happy to lose it and just, you know, have it taken away, maybe a la the stupid, well, not stupid, but the less than stellar M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Happening, I think it was. Anyway, I'm digressing here. The point is that if Arda is remade and remade perfect and according to Ilúvatar's plan, then Melkor and Sauron and the Balrogs and I guess the dragons and all that other stuff too, or at least the spirits that inhabit them, would need to be remade. And remade into beings with the ability to appreciate the benefits of love and friendship and, you know, the Sam and Frodo type relationship, the Merry and Pippin, Aragorn Arwen, Beren and Lúthien, Manwë and Elbereth, Varda, that was her original name. You know, unless they can be given the capacity to understand and really reinformed and at some levels reprogrammed to appreciate that, there's no real redemption. And then we see that in some ways all the evil, all the darkness must have been Ilúvatar's plan. Ilúvatar made Melkor. Ilúvatar says, when Melkor first does his Discord of the Music, that nothing in that universe doesn't come from him, and that no one can alter the music in his despite, but will just be his instrument for making things that are better and more beautiful. Now, that's maybe actually true. It may be that there, for Ilúvatar's plan, there needs to be a universe in which horrible things happen, only then can people really become good and the remade universe be good because it has a knowledge of how things could have been otherwise. This is possible. It's sort of like if you are born lucky and get everything right and always do well and always succeed, how much skill can you actually claim? You can claim talent, I suppose. Can you actually be thought to have learned anything, or are you simply just a phenomenon, a luck? That to some degree, everything is luck, of course, so that's very, very possible, and I'm not saying it would be a bad state in which to be, but since only the infinite could possibly be error-free, and I'm not even sure if that's possible, mathematically, logically, then maybe it's necessary to have bad things happen and to learn. But unless Melkor, Sauron, all those guys can be redeemed, can be saved, can learn the error of their ways and honestly be given not just the chance, but the wherewithal to grow and improve, then it's all just primate dominance hierarchy displays this innate urge to punish others, which is an evolved urge that serves to help maintain coherence in, you know, modest-sized tribal structures, and is there regardless of personal reasoning. But it's like many things in nature, it's a shorthand, it's an ad hoc, and it's built into the disgust systems that originally served merely to keep you away from feces and infected material and stuff. And so it was very much a revulsion and leads to judgmentalism and to blaming the being and to wanting to blame them and to wanting to punish them, even if they have seen the error of their ways and have improved. And this is ethically incoherent if what you're trying to do is make a better world and to redeem people. I mean, if anyone can be improved, then everyone should be able to be here. It's not really a new world, a new creation, a new beautiful, brilliant, perfect place. But how perfect can it be if people can't learn even after it's remade, can't grow, can't have disagreements? Maybe they could learn in the sense of having a more rational learning in the sense, but not actually getting all uptight and head up about it. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that if Morgoth and Sauron and all those guys can't be redeemed and made good, then it is in fact Ilúvatar that is evil and the source of evil. And Ilúvatar himself makes it pretty clear, if you read between the lines, that he is indeed the source of evil, because everything comes from him. So, well, praise be to Ilúvatar for the good stuff, but you know what? Hold them to account for the bad stuff. And maybe it is the best way, or maybe it's according to his plan, but just don't give him carte blanche on that kind of shit. It would be hard, of course, to be a Morgoth-type character and be redeemed. I think it would be hard, for instance, if someone had been a serial killer, a psychopath who had spent their life abusing and taking advantage of and harming and perhaps even killing other people, and they were cured because, of course, this is some dysfunction, or at least it is a function of their brain, and maybe they just didn't even have any connection or ability to care about other people. Presumably that's there, that can exist. Clearly there are plenty of creatures out there that don't care about other creatures, let alone humans, because they're just not built to. And it's possible for humans to be roughly that way. And if you were then cured, and the only thing that was cured was your ability to feel love and to connect and to recognize other people's pain and all that and to respond to it, it would be a painful process because you would have to somehow come to terms with the things you had done in the past. And hopefully other people would recognize that you're now different and not want to continue to punish you once you've been cured. But people are prone to want to do that. People hold grudges, but that's evil too, at least on this point of view. I don't know if I've actually gotten anywhere with this. I feel like I could go on and on and on, and it would make for a very tedious, probably, audio blog, because there's a lot more I could say about it, and I realize I'm already twice as long as I had meant for these things to go, and I haven't even gotten to that separate issue that was triggered by a snippet of a conversation between Bill Maher and Seth MacFarlane about believing scientists about things. Parenthetically here, you shouldn't believe them, but you should not presume to know more than they do about their bailiwick unless you make yourself an actual expert. And I don't mean just doing a Google search. At the very least, you should do a Google Scholar search and become a scholarly, you know, individual. Try to understand where they're coming from and why. And if you can find the flaws in their arguments from the point of view of original research and reasoning, by all means, get into that. Otherwise, you're just forming an uninformed opinion, which you have the right to do, but which you should certainly not feel particularly self-righteous about. Because such opinions, as they say, are like assholes. Everybody's got them, and they're all full of shit. But if you couldn't even pass high school biology, maybe you shouldn't think that you're well-informed about the nature of viruses and bacteria and medical care. Maybe you should try to learn more before passing any kind of judgment. But let's not get into that yet. I'll try to do that. Anyway, if people out there actually find this type of thing where I'm going on more at length interesting, let me know, please. If you have any response to it, any suggestions, any thoughts, I'd be welcome. They would be welcome. I would welcome them. I would be glad to hear them or read them, more likely. So by all means, leave comments on this on the blog. If and when I put it up as a quote-unquote video, leave a comment there. And thank you for listening.